And we're back. It's another week. This is Andrew Wood, Executive Director, Hope Resource Center. And this week, I am joined by Karen Ellison, founder and president of Deeper Still, which is an amazing ministry that we're going to talk about today as we talk about hope as well. But what we want to do today, Karen, is just kind of dive into, as 2015 comes to a close, we want to talk about Deeper Still and what y'all been doing for this year, what we have coming up for 2016, and just kind of talk about the life movement as a whole. And I think 2015, for those of us that celebrate life and are involved in anything that is pro-life, 2015 has been some kind of year, you know, with the videos about Planned Parenthood and presidential candidates talking about abortion and talking about life. I just think 2015 is going to be a year that we look back to say, okay, this was the beginning of something. Hopefully that's how we're going to say is this was the beginning of something very special. But Karen, if you would just kind of tell the listeners about Deeper Still, kind of the origin and what started Deeper Still and the focus that y'all have in this wonderful ministry.
Yeah. Well, thank you. And thanks for having me today. Deeper Still, first of all, part of it came out of my own personal testimony, because I had an abortion too when I was in college. And so part of what I, my heart for this ministry and just what I've learned over the years comes out of my own story of brokenness and healing and restoration and what I had to walk through, what kind of the steps I had to, or the phases or that the Lord took me through. And then also Him just giving me a heart for, now are you willing to let your voice be heard so that others could come into their healing and restoration and know that I am a God who heals. So I had actually worked in the pregnancy center movement for some years too. And we did some post-abortion healing there. And during those early years, really a Bible study was the only thing that was really available. And so we did that and it was great and so forth. But, in the later years and after I moved here to Knoxville, the Lord really began to put it on my heart. There's other ways to get at this. Sometimes in a Bible study over several weeks period of time, that can be difficult for people to commit to that length of time or to hang with you. Or sometimes when you're doing a Bible study, you kind of open up their hearts and they just start to be open and, start to get in touch with what's really underneath all that. And then you kind of have to close it down and wait for next week. And so that can be intimidating, and so people don't always follow through. So I really began to seek the Lord, like, Lord, how can we do this to capture our participants in a way that they'll really hang with you to the end? And so He started to give me this idea about a retreat, and I don't know how else to say it other than I just began to pray, and the Lord just started to give it to me step by step. He's like, I'll show you how to do this, what some of the core things are that people need to be healed of. And so I really just started kind of experimenting and trying this and trying that. During that time when I was developing it, I was actually one of the pregnancy centers here locally in Oak Ridge. And they just kind of, trusted me as a volunteer to kind of develop a program out for them. And then after that, so we did that for like 7 years. So I really was kind of formulating this thing over a period of about 7 years and saw the Lord do phenomenal things that were just stunning. He was showed up so powerfully. And so then, people began to say to me, maybe you can make this available for other people to like share how to do this. Cause it could go way outside of the borders of, Knoxville, Tennessee or whatever. So in 2008, we decided it was time to start an entity of our own. So that's why we started Deeper Still. So ever since then, we are doing retreats here locally. We do 3 a year. But then our mission is not just to do retreats here, but to teach other people how to do retreats. So we are starting to multiply. We call them chapters. So right now we have 6 chapters throughout the United States. And we have many more in the pipeline that are, kind of getting started. And then we also believe the Lord wants us to bring this message internationally. So we got some international things perking as well. So
Yeah, and I think a lot of times when we talk about the pro-life movement, I've said this so many times on this show and at other places that we are pro-life, but we, for so many folks, that's pro-baby, and we should be pro-baby, and we should celebrate babies. I mean, my wife just had one 2 weeks ago, but that pro-life stance, the pro-baby stance, should also come outside of the womb and mean that we're pro-woman. And so when we're looking at these women that have gone through some very difficult decisions in their life, and men as well, not just women, and what y'all are trying to do with Deeper Still is understand that there's a healing that needs to occur. Society and they've done studies that I just think are detrimental to people, mm-hmm. when they say that there's no effects after an abortion. I mean, we just know that isn't true. I mean, yes. You know that isn't true personally, but also because of what you've seen through Deeper Still. We know that isn't true because of the patients that have come into Hope and people that we've talked to who are post-abortive. So what I love about what y'all do is you understand there's a healing that needs to occur. And it's a healing that's so much deeper than just go and be off by yourself, but it's a it's a healing that can only be penetrated by the Lord. And that's what I love about the retreats that y'all have. I mean, I've talked to people that have gone on those retreats and the changes that have occurred through them because of those retreats. The only thing you can point to is God is moving in that. I mean, we had staff retreat at Eagle Rock, and the folks that run Eagle Rock came to us and they were like, you have no idea what God does through this place for Deeper Still, for men and women. And so share with us a story or two that you've seen in 2015 or even back further, just through your retreats that you've had, not to get super personal with some folks, but kind of some stories where you've seen just God just rock people at those places in times of need and to see the healing that has occurred through them.
Yeah. Well, okay, so let me say this. First of all, I totally agree with you. You know, first of all, I'm going to make a statement that some people would totally disagree with me on, but abortion literally affects every area of your life. Now, to the degree that people attribute some of the ways that they are manifesting woundedness, sometimes it takes years because you have to break through so much denial. And let's just say you're someone who has tried to believe with all your heart that abortion somehow benefits women or that it's the lesser of two evils. And so you'll hang on to that. You'll hang on to that thing as long as you possibly can in your life. And some people go to the grave, declaring that this thing was like the best thing that ever happened to me. But really, when we all know that the day is going to come when all that's going to be revealed and brought to light and all that. But when that denial can be penetrated, which is a work of the Holy Spirit, when he can penetrate that denial and people give him permission to begin to search our hearts, that's when we start to just let our defenses down and allow truth to reign in us. I mean, the Lord knows the truth about us. We don't even know the truth about us a lot of times because we have so many grids and so many filters and all that. But when you give the Lord permission to, like, Lord, show me the truth about my own heart, that's when he will. And then he will, because he wants to free you, not because he wants to torment you, but because he wants to free you. And abortion affects, as a woman, it affects not only your sense of self as a woman, but as a mother. Your mothering heart is affected by abortion, because abortion is 20th and 21st century child sacrifice. I mean, that's what it is. It's just in these centuries that it's much more sophisticated in its in its way it's done. But and for a father, God made fathers after his own image. Father God made fathers. Mm-hmm. And their father's heart, you cannot pretend that it's not affected when your children from your seed has been sacrificed. And so all those things spiritually translate. Sometimes we don't always cognitively get what's going on inside of us, but there's some loss, there's some void, there's some hole, there's some guilt we carry around and we don't know what to attribute it to. We don't want to attribute it to abortion because then we'd have to really own that it really was a horrible mistake that we've made. But maybe I can you know, maybe just to illustrate this a little bit, Andrew, like, you know, on the intake form, we have an intake form that our participants fill out before they come to our retreat. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we kind of ask them what are they looking for out of this, or what are they in touch with that they know needs to be healed? And then one of the questions we ask on there is, what's your biggest fear in coming to, if you think about coming to this retreat, what's the biggest fear you're facing that you're going to have to press through? And here are some of the things people say. People fear that they will, that they will be openly judged by us as a team, that they will be exposed or shamed, and that it'll be too painful to engage in the process. They say things like, you'll use my abortion to smear my family, or like my family name, because it's a big family secret. They think it'll be wasting someone's time, like they don't really have that much of a need, and they don't want to take the space of someone else who really has a need. We always laugh at that one,
right,
because,
yeah,
you know. And they are afraid that their kids will find out, that will, you know, the confidentiality will be broken. They're afraid that they'll be so overwhelmed, and if they start crying, they won't stop. And so these are the kinds of things that, that people come into the, and they're legitimate fears. I'm not trying to say that they're,
sure,
not legitimate. They're very legitimate. But when the Lord begins to work and he begins to move, he just peels back layer by layer. And I think one of the things I so love about how God works, he will not give you something that you're not ready for. Like, if he wants to go to a certain place in your heart because he wants to touch that place, he's going to already prepare you to go there. But if you're not ready or you're not willing, he's not going to force himself on you. But I think one of the things that's beautiful about a retreat setting, two kinds of healing need to happen. There needs to be a vertical healing. That is with you and God. You and God, because this is between you and God primarily.
Right.
But secondly, a horizontal healing happens, and that's with the body of Christ. That's with other people, and how Jesus has his church to minister to one another. And I can
talk
more.
Yeah, and we're going to, I want to dive into some stories of hope and deeper still in 2015. We'll be back in a sec. Back. This is Andrew Wood, Executive Director of Hope Resource Center. Today I'm joined by Karen Ellison, founder and president of Deeper Still. And we were right in the middle, right before commercial break, of you kind of talking about as those layers are pulled back and as God goes in and he wants to get a certain part of your heart, kind of talk a little bit more about as those layers are pulled back and what happens at those retreats.
Yeah. Well, you know, and I think one of the things that we all fear, like if we have sin in our life or we have guilt because of that, what we want to do is, first of all, keep it to ourselves. And if we have to tell someone, okay, so I have to tell God since he knows anyway.
Right.
So we can kind of get that thing. And so part of how we want to manage our own healing. So the way we want to manage it is we want to say, Lord, this is just between you and I.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to confess it to you. I receive your forgiveness. And as long as you and I are good, there's no reason to bring anyone else into this. Well, but the Lord, he created his body for body ministry, and it's his idea. It's not, you know, it's God's idea that he manifests his healing power through people. That's one of the key ways he does it. So one of the things that's beautiful about a retreat setting, for example, because we have a team, we have a whole ministry team, and everybody on that team, men and women both, because we have men and women both at our retreats, they have different gifts. They have different gifts that they bring to the body. And, you know, I feel like people use this illustration a lot, but I believe it. You know, the illustration of like when Lazarus was raised from the dead. And so Jesus called him forth and brought his spirit back into him. But he said to the others, he said, now remove his grave clothes. And I feel like that's what we do. It's like the Lord's the one that does the healing, but he kind of says to us as the body, now you remove their grave clothes. Because as we begin to unwrap those grave clothes and just love on them and affirm the truth and stand with them as they're, you know, just bringing down the lies that they've believed, that's powerful in removing shame. So even though shame can keep you so locked up where you don't plan on telling anybody anything ever, and you plan on going to your grave with it. Jesus says, no, I have a way to deliver you from that shame. And it's got to be bringing other people, you know, bring your trusted people.
Right, right.
You don't cast your pearls before swine. But you mean, these are my people that I have prepared and equipped to minister to you. So let them minister to you. And so it's body life. And healing comes through that as well.
Yeah, and what we know, just like at Hope, we have, we had a patient today that came in and, you know, was kind of on the fence. I mean, really leaning toward having an abortion. And part of the reason is because she has a kid already, and the kid has autism. And another part of the reason is because boyfriend said, I want you to have an abortion. And they came in today, and she looked at the nurse practitioner and said, my boyfriend has changed his mind, so we're going to have this baby. And I think the amazing thing about that is, you know, so many times people say, well, men have no say in the matter. Men need to just step away. It's not your body. Quit telling women what to do with their body. And what we know and what statistics show is men, most of the time, the first person the woman goes to, yes, is the man. And what they're looking for there is, deep down, they're wanting that man to go, I'm going to stand with you in this. And so many times, if the man will just say, I'm going to be here, then life will be chosen and life will be celebrated. And what I love about what y'all do is it's not just for women. And so many people would say, well, your retreats are all women. There's mm-hmm. no way men are not affected by abortion. Mm-hmm. And what you know is that obviously isn't the case, is men come to your retreats as well.
Totally. First of all, let me say, when I was pregnant and I was a Christian, I was attending a Christian college. Actually, my boyfriend and I together. Anyway, clearly he was the first person mm-hmm. I went to. And he was also the first person to say, I don't think we can do this. I think we need to have an abortion. So I totally agree. The influence that men have in this decision is, you can't overstate it. There's a study that just came out, LifeWay mm-hmm. did, and one of the statistics, and they interviewed, I think, 1,000 women on this, and they said that women were most likely to discuss their decision to have an abortion or not, first of all, with the father of the baby,
yep.
and then second of all, with a medical professional. And then they also say that one-third of the women that they interviewed indicated that the father of the baby was the most influential person. So if you just think about that alone, and if there's any men, you know, listening to us on this, your voice matters. And how, because she is looking to you for security, she's looking to you for just affirmation and protection and all that. And, and if your relationship has any substance to it at all, you can advocate for your child, even if it doesn't mean you get married. Maybe it doesn't mean you get married. It doesn't have to mean that. But a life of a child is at stake. And so, so the men we have at our retreat, first of all, I think men are just, I believe the Lord is stirring in the men in our country. And they are recognizing that their hearts hurt too. And up to maybe recent years, they have kind of backed off because they were told to back off.
Mm-hmm.
And so, but now we're calling them forth. It's like, no, you have a heart in this. Your heart is part of this. These are your children. And your heart needs healed as well. And not only your heart needs healed, but we need your voice in this, so you don't acquiesce any longer. And so the men that have come to our retreats, it's been so beautiful to watch their hearts, first of all, be sweetly broken, is how I like to say it. But then they begin to know that they can could legitimately grieve. Like, they didn't even thought they had a right to or could even speak into this in any level. So for even to see, now at our retreats, I'll say this, that our women team members minister to women and men team members minister to men, but we have some open, like we're all together in some of our open sessions where the men and women can share back, share openly. So when the women on our retreats begin to hear our men share that their hearts, like, women are like, really? I had no idea. You mean you guys actually feel something?
Mm-hmm.
And so it heals a woman's heart to just even hear that a man's heart is in this as well. Or for men, probably the number one thing I hear men say after women have shared or they've heard something, is they say something like, you know, we never realized how deeply we hurt you.
Hmm.
And inevitably, in almost every retreat, a man has come up to me at some point and he said, would you allow me to just kind of, as a representative of men, would you allow me to just speak a word of apology and ask forgiveness for these women of all the ways that we have failed them? And they've done that on their own initiative. It's not anything. And women have done the same thing. They realize how much they have become embittered or judged men, or just carry a bitter root.
Right.
And they've also asked those men for forgiveness.
Yeah, and it's one of the stories that kind of sticks out to me at Hope for 2015 was we had a patient come in, and she knew she was pregnant. We did an ultrasound and all that, and she walked out saying, I really don't know what I'm going to do. She looked at our medical staff and said, y'all are telling me one thing, and you're encouraging me to choose life, and you're walking me through this process. My friends are telling me it's a blob of cells, and I'm not ready for this. And so we really had no idea. We had no idea which direction this patient would go. And when they came back for another ultrasound, they came back with their ex-boyfriend. And because she told us, you know, I'm pregnant. I broke up with my boyfriend. We're not even together. I don't want to tell him. And so she comes back with her ex-boyfriend, and she tells the story. Well, when I left here, I called him and I said, I need you to go with me to get an abortion. Mm. And this ex-boyfriend says over the phone, I know we have our differences and I know we have our struggles, but I tell you what we're going to do is we're going to look past that and we're going to parent this kid. And that's all she needed to hear. And so to see the picture of a relationship that's been broken, and then to see them watch their baby on an ultrasound screen, and to see him reach down and hold her hand.
Absolutely.
So to see what God can do in that yes. moment of brokenness, a relationship broken, you know, a female broken, a man broken. Now there's life that's going to come into this. They got to take care of a baby. What are they going to do? Society is saying, you cannot do this. Your dreams are over. Your goals are over. Everything's over for you. And all she needed was someone to say, I'm going to do this with you. And to me, that is a picture of what we need. That's what men are designed to do. And whether we like it or not, or whether society agrees with that or not, men are designed to lead. And men should be stepping up, especially if you decided to have sex with someone. There is a responsibility there to then step up for the consequences of that. And I think it's amazing to me that the more that I get involved in with pro-life stuff, to see the lack of involvement from men. But I'm with you. They're you know, seeing presidential candidates and people talk eloquently about life and how life begins at conception and what they want to do from a legislative side, and also what they want to do just from a believer standpoint is really a beautiful picture of kind of the direction that we're going. And that's what we're going to touch on when we get back, is the direction of the pro-life movement and where we see that going. We'll be back in a sec.
Just to know you and to make you known, we lift your name on high.
And we're back. This is Andrew Wood, Executive Director, Hope Resource Center, here with Karen Ellison, founder and president of Deeper Still, which is a post-abortive ministry doing amazing work, not just here in Knoxville, but around the country, as there's different chapters all around, and some hopes that may be in the future international with some opportunities internationally. So we are thankful that Karen, that you decided to join us today. And what I want to do now is kind of talk about where we see, and I know this is, you know, a guessing game, but where we see the pro-life movement going. Because we talked about the videos that came out this year mm-hmm. that kind of exposed Planned Parenthood for doing some things that that may or may not be legal, but are certainly morally unacceptable. And so with that, we've had presidential candidates come out in debates and on TV talking about it. We've had presidential candidates come out in full support of what Planned Parenthood is doing. We've had, you know, a president that's in the White House currently come out in full support for what they're doing. And so But what I think is what we're seeing is we're seeing churches. I've had meeting with pastor after pastor after pastor who are just eagerly wanting to do more. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you and I both went to North Star Church, mm-hmm. where they it just was a beautiful picture of a safe place for men and women to be and to be prayed over and just a great way of talking about life and talking about abortion. And so if you had to guess, you know, is this the start of something beautiful, or are we on the cusp of something even darker than what we've seen?
Well, am I allowed to say both and?
Yeah, I think so, yes.
You know, the enemy, we know that his M.O. is always to steal, kill, and destroy. That's what he does. He's always going to do that, and he's always going to have a strategy to bring death and destruction onto people. And one of the ways he does that is through abortion. At the same time, God, who is God and is so much more powerful than the enemy. And the Lord, he is coming. He's a soon and coming king, and he is drawing people to himself, and he is going to pull out all the stops, I believe, as we get closer to the end, to cast people a life raft, you know, to be saved, and you don't have to go down in flames, so to speak. So I think, you know, as we, the church, first of all, you know, the Lord will use anything and everything. A lot of times we don't know we're broken until there's some kind of crisis or some kind of a trigger that triggers us into reality. And so, you know, interesting when you mentioned the Planned Parenthood videos. Well, the good news is that is getting exposed for what it is. But what part of the consequence of that is that it is when people watch that who have abortion wounded hearts, those are triggers. Like, you want to run out of the room. You don't want to see it, or you'll just get really angry about it or whatever. You're going to have an emotional response, right, unless you're completely emotionally shut off. Okay. Well, God is going to use that. He's going to use that as kind of an earthquake in your life to say, look at the dashboard of your car. Something is wrong with your heart. I'm trying to show you that your soul is wounded. So don't just take this as condemnation and run out, but like press into it. Say, you know, Lord, do you have something? I still cry. Why do I cry every time this comes on? Why do I feel like I want to throw up when someone starts talking about abortion? Why can't I go to Sanctity of Human Life Sunday in my church? Why do I run out when I know that's the pastor's going to start speaking about that? So the Lord is going to use all those triggers for good if you'll let him. Because if you have an abortion wounded heart, you're going to avoid all that like the plague. But you're never going to be able to avoid it. Like, so politicians on the debates, you're going to hear about abortion. It's going to be out there. You'd have to never watch TV again as long as you live.
Right.
To never hear.
Well, now
the word.
It's in television shows. I mean, it's everywhere.
It's everywhere. Mm-hmm. So I believe the Lord is using that. And, you know, and this is statistically what we've been shown, is about 70% of women who have abortions identify themselves as Christian. So if you are a Christian, if you're a pastor, if you're a church leader, you've got to know that it's in your church. Mm-hmm. And you've got to know that they're not talking about it, nor do they plan on talking about it, unless you, first of all, make it, like you said, make it a safe place to talk to. Don't let the word abortion own you. Mm-hmm. You own it, you know. And so many, like for several years, I couldn't even say the word abortion. Because I couldn't say the word. Like, I hated the word. It made me want to gag. And I did not have the freedom to even say the word. And so I sure as heck wasn't going to be talking to anybody, especially in the church. So, but I believe there is a tidal wave coming of pain and devastation that's going to begin to manifest. Because when you have, now we're getting close to 60 million abortions, mm-hmm. right? In just the United States alone, since in the last 42 years or whatever. Do you know that most still, I think even to this day, still the majority of women who had abortions from 1973, starting in 1973, they're still alive. Mm-hmm. They haven't all died out. They're just, you know, that generation is beginning to die, you know.
Sure.
But so we have millions upon millions upon millions, multi-millions of women living in the United States today and men who fathered those children who are living with abortion wounded hearts. And the Lord wants them to be healed. He wants to set them free. And so I believe that part of the church, part of we as a church, we need to be making this something that we can talk about, that we can step into, that that we can offer healing, and so that you can get your heart back and get your voice back, so that you can be the mother of the children you're mothering now with from a whole heart, or fathering now, or your grandchildren, or whatever your legacy is. Allow the Lord to restore that so that your legacy can, so that you could leave a mark in your grandchildren's life.
Right, and I think as we, as believers, you know, we need to be standing for life and not, you know, so many people will come to me and say, well, that's a political issue. I'm not going to talk about that with you. That's cool. Christians will say that to me.
Yeah.
Well, abortion and pro-life, pro-choice, that's a political issue. There's no place for politics in the church. And I'm going, you're wrong. Like, it, politics have taken it, but it is not a political issue.
That's right.
At its conception. It is a gospel issue. I'm working on, I'm doing a sermon on Sanctity of Life Sunday, and I'm working through that sermon, and I'm looking at the text, and I'm going to be in Luke 1 where... and we talked about this, where we're going to, you know, what I'm going to do is I'm going to talk about where John the Baptist is inside of his mom, and Mary goes to see Elizabeth, and what happens? John the Baptist jumps for joy inside of his mom when just the presence of the embryo of Christ enters the room. So that points to life and the importance of life. And so what we need to do as Christians is say, no, that's a what Luke 1 does. Is it just answers the story that was told in Genesis 3.
That's right.
That God, in his judgment, shows mercy and says, woman, you're gonna feel the pains of childbirth. But through his grace, he says, you're going to feel it. But through that, the Savior is going to come. And so this is not a political issue. This is a gospel Christian issue that we need to be standing up. Now, that means we need to vote a certain way. That means we need to be active and involved in different things. But we have to stand up and say, it is not okay.
That's right.
And we're going to celebrate life. And in doing that, we also have to then look around us and go, there's probably a lot of people in this worship center that have had an abortion. How am I going to love them?
That's right.
How am I going to be there for them and help them in their healing process? So through judgment, there is mercy and grace. That's what we see all throughout the Bible. And so when it is talked about as pastors and as church leaders, or even as just pro-life advocates, we don't talk about it from a standpoint of hate and bitterness towards those that made a decision we disagree with.
Right.
But we talk about it from a place of love, saying the only answer to your hurt and brokenness is Christ.
That's right. And, you know, I think one of the enemy's strategy has been, if he could try to make abortion into a political issue, then he knows the church won't touch it.
Exactly.
But really, what is it, how is it different, like, from sex trafficking?
All
right, so sex trafficking, is that first a moral issue? Is that a church issue? Well, the church hasn't been afraid to embrace that, but no one's really made that into a political issue either. So it's just all a subtle deception, I believe, to keep the church silent.
And we've been silent for too long. Russell Moore, who's wrote a number of books, and he's the president of the ERLC, and what he's saying is the silent majority, there is no majority. Like, we used to call ourselves the silent majority, and what he's saying is we're really not the majority. If you look around and see what's going on with marriage and all kinds of things going on around us, we're not the majority. But what we need to do, and he put it in, I wish I could write like him. He said, it is time for the reborn to stand up for the unborn.
Oh, that's great.
And I mean, because we as believers, now's the time.
Yeah.
You know, we have all the wars combined in America. We've lost 1.2 million people in all the wars combined.
Mm-hmm.
And we lose that in abortions every single year.
That's right.
You know, some have put it and said, we have a 9/11 that occurs every single day through abortion.
That's right.
And so if you just look at the numbers, it is time for believers to go, you know what, kind of like Paul when he was in Athens, and he was on vacation, he was waiting for his boys to catch up with him, and he looked around and he said, something's not right here. These people are worshiping idols. And the Bible says that his spirit was provoked, and that's a little s.
That's
that
right.
Wasn't the Holy Spirit. That was just something in his gut
that's
said,
right.
Something isn't right here. I need to do
That's
something.
Right.
And so what did he do? He got engaged into conversations and into debates, and he went to the people. And he didn't go in there with bitterness. He went in there with truth and with with knowledge of his past, knowing where he'd come from, and to go and say, this isn't right. This isn't what we need to be doing. This isn't how we're designed. There is something so much greater out there for you. And that's what we need to be doing as Christians and leaders of organizations like we are. We need to be coming alongside the church as just an arm and saying, what can we do to help?
You know, and throughout church history, you know, there's always been a cause to champion that the Lord has put for the people at that period of time in history, whether that was slavery and like
right.
William Wilberforce, things like this.
Right.
Well, clearly, this is our cause, so to speak, to champion for the church, for the Lord. It's like let the church shine in this hour before Christ's return, because the bloodshed that happens behind closed doors is unprecedented in probably all of history, with those numbers like you just
right.
talked
yeah,
about.
Right, yeah, it really is a, you know, I've said before, it's time for a generation to understand that a generation has been aborted.
That's right.
And it's time for us to look around. And this is the cause that you and I both have said, this is what we're devoting mm-hmm. our professional time to. I mean, this is the mountain we're staking our flag in. And I'm okay with that. And so all I want to do, and I know all you want to do, is come alongside and help folks understand the importance of standing for life. When we come back, Karen, we're going to go a little lighthearted, and I want to talk about New Year's resolutions, if you have any. And I'll share some of mine for the year 2016. We'll be back.
Lost are saved, find their way at the sound.
And we're back. This is Andrew Wood, Executive Director of Hope Resource Center, here today with Karen Ellison, founder and president of Deeper Still, which is an amazing post-abortive ministry here in Knoxville and around the country, doing a lot of great work. But Karen, what I want to do now, and we just talked off air about how I struggle sometimes to go lighthearted with anything on the show, except last week when I brought my kids in here, and that was lighthearted, but it was atrocious, and maybe the worst thing I've ever done. But and then you asked, was somebody in here to help you? And no, it was just me. Phil just stood in there and you know, just kind of laughed at me the entire time I'm with my kids in here. So, but it gave my wife a break for a little bit with and just to spend time with our newest baby, Evelyn. So what I want to do now, Karen, is talk about New Year's resolutions. And I'm really not into that as much, but I do think it's important that we reflect on the year that just passed and kind of look toward the year that is coming up and make plans for ourselves. So so I'll share mine first,
yeah,
and then
please do.
And then I'll let you share yours. So just personally, I want to be more present with my family. I am attached to my phone. My wife is sitting somewhere right now going, absolutely.
So is my husband.
I'm attached to my phone, always checking email, you know, Facebook, Twitter, all those things just to see, hey, is somebody giving hope? Is somebody, you know, so I'm always attached. So I would like to be a little bit more present with my family. Even at now, sometimes my son will say, this really hurts. Put your phone away. And so my 4.5-year-old notices it. That's a problem.
Yeah.
a big problem. So my next one, I'll just share two of my personal ones. My next one is being more hospitable. So we recently moved and bought a new house. And so my goal there is, because we have the space now, my goal is to be more hospitable, open our home to people,
awesome.
Celebrate with people, family and friends, and have dinners and just really be open to do that. God has blessed us, and so let's be good stewards of that. So that would be my other personal one. My professional one would be I want to get more and more people involved with pro-life stuff. So that's why on this show I'm interviewing people like you and Abby Johnson and others. I want people to understand the pro-life movement is happening around the country and around the world, and wanting to get more people involved. To be honest with Hope Resource Center, I want us to set the bar for pregnancy centers mm-hmm. around the country. I want other, and we've had some of this, but I want it to happen more. I want other directors, I want other clinics to call us and say, how can we do what y'all are doing? So we need to be the benchmark, and I think that's important, that we try to strive to serve and help as many people as we can, and not just the patients that come in our doors, but helping other clinics around the country do that as well. Mm-hmm. So that would be my personal and professional resolution. So let's hear yours.
Those are very lofty and good. Well, all right. So I'm not really a New Year's resolution person either. Although I might say my birthday is on New Year's Day.
Well, there you go. You should be then.
There's something about that. I should.
So one resolution is to have a birthday.
That's right. Without getting older.
That's right.
I'm gonna try to figure out how to do that. No. So I guess just, you know, one of my definite weaknesses and challenges is I'm just not a technology girl. Like, no one comes to me with their IT problems. Let's just put it that way.
Gotcha.
So, you know the whole thing about staff your weaknesses?
Right.
So, you know, so you have to have other people. You have your people around. But I do need, so one thing I do try to do is not just immediately be so intimidated by the whole thing that I'm not teachable. To try to like don't even try to tell me how that thing runs because I don't even want to know.
Right.
I've had to kind of make myself cross over that bridge. It's like, okay, I can do this, or I get my peeps around me. And so anyway, I'm trying to be a little more techie.
So more techie for 2016.
Something
good.
To just make me not just run. And then this is both a personal goal, but also professional. I'm writing a book. Mm-hmm. I think I shared that with you before. About the abortion, healing the abortion wounded heart. And the audiences are, you know, everybody. Certainly, if you have an abortion wounded heart, this book is for you, but it's also for the church. It's for Christians to do, just as we've talked about here, all is like, how do we help equip each other to address the coming tide of woundedness? And so, anyway, my goal is to finish that book in 2016. Please pray for me. I mean, I actually think the end is in sight now, which is amazing. I never thought I'd see the end in sight. But anyway, so that's the other thing I'm trying
to do. That's awesome. All right. So having a birthday, finishing your book, and becoming a tech nerd.
And a tech genius.
That's the goal. Okay. Well, that's awesome. Well, the year end is coming up, and year end is always important. If you're in development at all, that means we need you. If you want to give to Deeper Still or to Hope or to any other nonprofit organization, and you want to get credit for that on your taxes coming up, then you have to have it postmarked by December 31st, 2015. Mm-hmm. So if you want to give to Deeper Still, and I would encourage you to do that, you can go to www.godeeperstill.org, and then I'm sure there's a place to donate. You can learn all about them at their website. If you want to give to Hope, investinghope.com, and then click on donate, and we'll take care of it from there. We are so thankful for you. Have a great rest of 2015, and we'll talk to you in 2016. Bye-bye.
Lift your head, weary sinner. The river's just ahead. Down the path of forgiveness, salvation's waiting. Here to lift you up, here to